Today, we'll talk to somebody who just won a Disney World trip and has no idea where to begin. That's coming up on this episode 62 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WDW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WWPrepSchool.com. Thank you so much for being here for episode 62. I am happy to have you. If it sounds a little bit better this week, it might be because my microphone last time was going out and the connections weren't working properly, but I have a new microphone, so hopefully the sound is back to our normal. I want to start today with just some reminders that you can always find me on social media. I have a bit of a social media addiction. I love it. My issue is always just in trying to plan my time so that I'm not spending too much time on social media. I'm actually doing other things as well. I happen to really like Facebook and Pinterest in particular. Those are both under WDW Prep School. On Sunday nights, we have a Q&A on the Facebook page, and I do giveaways on average about once a week or so. So it's a lot of fun there. I also post news as soon as I learn about it and all kinds of things. Pinterest has about a dozen pins that are posted there every single day with ideas. And the pins are not just to my own content. They are, in fact, mostly to other people's content, not mine. So it's just lots of good ideas for your trip. And so be sure to follow if you are a Pinterest user. There is also something new that was just created. And every time something new is created, I don't necessarily jump on board. I do try to reserve my name so that somebody else cannot start a WW Prep School on a new social network. But there is something new that was created that I am excited about, and it is an app for iOS right now. I believe the Android version is coming in 2015, and it is called Rooms. And it is kind of a combination of a chat room and Instagram in a way. So the old school chat rooms where everybody just logged in and could type messages to each other in a big stream of conversation. It's not quite like that, but it is like people can share pictures and videos and text. You can also type messages there as well. And it's a ton of fun. And so it's great because you can just create it around different topics. So there are topics like nail art, you know, people that are really into doing their nails in different ways. There are rooms that are for street art or parkour ideas. I mean, just anything you can name, there are now rooms around this, and it's just a chat room for people that like that topic. So I have one for Disney World stuff, and the way that you get access to it is very strange. So my recommendation is if you're interested in joining the WW Prep After School chat, which is what I've called the room, that you download the Rooms app first in the App Store. And then you take a screenshot of the invitation. And this is how it works. You take a screenshot on your phone of the invitation. And then when you open the Rooms app, it scans your camera roll for these invitations and will automatically add those rooms to your app. And then you have all your rooms. If it does not automatically add it, then you click the button that says use invite. And then it will ask you to go find it on your camera roll. It's a bit like a QR code. But it's interesting. I've never seen anything quite like it, but we're having a ton of fun in the room there. We've got people posting their countdowns and their trip pictures, and I've posted some videos and I'm throwing in some tips, and it's just a lot of fun. I love seeing you all contribute because when I'm on social media, a lot of times I feel like it's me talking to people and then they can comment on it, but I would much rather have people be able to join in and share their stuff without me prompting the conversation first. So anyway, that's the Rooms app, and I will include the room invitation in the show notes of this page so you can join us there as well. Another thing is that there was just a Disney Podcast Awards, and I didn't even know what was going on, and it was the first of its kind, and this podcast won Most Informative Podcast. So I don't know how exactly the nomination process worked or the voting, but if you nominated this podcast, thank you very much. I appreciate being voted Most Informative. There were other categories as well. So I will include a link in the show notes to the full awards results, the winners of all the different categories, because a lot of you asked me what other podcasts you should listen to. So maybe the other winners will help you decide who else to win. There was a a noticeable absence from the awards, and that was the Diz Unplugged podcast, which I personally find quite informative myself. They talk a lot about news and things going on. So although they were not a winner, I still do like listening to them as a podcast. So be sure to check them out, in addition to the winners that will be posted in the show notes. So that's it for my main event announcements. So today's show is an interview I did, and most of my interviews have been with first timers who have a complete trip plan that they have put together before their trip, and then I talk to them before and after their trip. However, today's interview is with somebody who won a trip and had no idea where to begin. So she was much earlier in the process. And I've learned two things from this conversation today with Judy. One of them is that people who are this early in the process ask much different questions than people that have already put together a trip plan. Because if you put together a good trip plan, you have done some research and you already know the answers to a lot of the questions. That doesn't make her questions wrong or bad. It just makes them different. And I think it's important to address the questions because, you know, when you tell people you can take a bus to Magic Kingdom and then take the monorail to the Contemporary to eat at Chef Mickey's, that sounds basic to many of us. But to them, it's like, well, do I have to have a ticket to get in the Magic Kingdom? How does this work? You know, so the questions are a bit more basic, but I think still important to include here. And the second thing I learned from this interview is that you cannot plan an entire trip in one conversation. I sort of thought maybe we would be able to, but the fact is that there's a lot to cover. And so I just consider today's interview to be a bit of a working session and sort of me at the beginning trying to, you know, push towards the direction of, hey, let's get this trip planned. And then eventually realizing that I just need to answer some questions because there are some things that she wanted to know that I was able to help her out with, but couldn't have anticipated myself. So anyway, today's a bit of a working session with a person who just won a trip, and you'll hear how she won it and some of her plans that she is going to make. And then by the end, she had some answers, but she still needs to do some work. So you'll hear how that sort of worked out. And as always, I will have a quick tip of the day. So let's dive in and hear from Judy. So we're talking today to Judy, who needs to plan a trip, but isn't quite sure where to start. So welcome to the podcast, Judy.
Thank you for having me.
I am happy to have you here. Now, your story is interesting because the way it began is not the way a typical Disney World trip planning, begins. You won a trip. So how did you win your trip?
I won the trip through a sweepstakes that I entered, and this was through Facebook, actually, and I just entered, and, you know, I was hoping for the best, but, of course, you know, I didn't expect to win, but I did, and I'm super, super excited.
Do you mind sharing the source? Because there's a lot of scammy Facebook things happening, but there's some legitimate ones, too.
Yeah, sure. It was from Alamo Rent-A-Car.
Okay.
It's called the From Coast to Castle Sweepstakes.
Good. And I think I'm going to include a link in the show notes about watching for scams, because there are some pages that are just trying to get your personal information. So we want to make sure to avoid those. But Alamo is certainly a reputable company. So good for you. Now, what exactly did you win?
What I won here was you can actually pick from one of the grand prizes, which is either a Disney Cruise Line vacation package, the Walt Disney World Resort vacation package, or the Disneyland Resort vacation package. And I picked the Walt Disney World one, which is a trip for four people. It is for 7 nights at one of the deluxe hotels, which is determined by the sponsor. It also includes 4 of the 7-day Magic Your Way tickets, and also a Visa card and a Disney gift card to kind of go towards some of the expenses, as well as a tour guide for 6 hours, it says, during one day.
Wow. That's fantastic. So when you said that you get to stay in deluxe resort, you said it's determined by the sponsor, but Disney World does have deluxe resorts that they have classified. So are those different things or the same thing?
I am assuming that it means one of the deluxe Disney resorts. I know there's like a handful of them, but I just don't know which one yet. I think until I book the vacation, I'm not sure.
So is it your choice or is it just a hotel they give you?
It is the sponsor's choice of one of the deluxe
hotels. All right. So that's what they mean. They get to pick it, but it will be a deluxe. Okay. Yes. So it's 7 nights for 4 people, but do you get to choose the dates?
Yes. They just said that it has to be completed within a year of the drawing. So I think I'm planning to go in May of next year.
Okay. And I think in your email to me, you said mid-May, and that's a fantastic time to go. It's one of my favorite times. I was there mid-May this year. And One thing that's great about mid-May is not only is it it's between Easter crowds and summer crowds, but it also is an overlap between when Star Wars weekends are happening at Hollywood Studios and the Flower and Garden Festival at Epcot. So you kind of get to take advantage of both at the same time and have low crowds before they arrive for the summer. So if you go with mid-May, I think it's going to be a great time. So those are good dates. And awesome. May park hours were just released recently. And I'm not sure how much you know about planning yet. But if you want to have any of the hard to get dining reservations, and not all of them are hard to get, but just a few, especially the character meals, then those should be made 180 days in advance, which is coming up very, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if you were to go like May, if you were to go May 10th, for example, the 180 days before that is November 11th. So, You're sort of starting, you know, just before that would begin. So if you could get everything planned in the next couple of weeks, then you could make those hard to get dining reservations still if you wanted to.
Yes, that's what I hope to do. I hope.
Okay, well, that's good. You're just in the nick of time. So, awesome. All right. So mid-May, a deluxe resort that will be assigned to you 7 nights. That much you know.
Yes.
Now, the next step I would normally recommend is to figure out how you want to spend your days. So for instance, normally I would suggest maybe a couple of days at Magic Kingdom, maybe a couple of days at Epcot, a day at Animal Kingdom, a day at Hollywood Studios, and a break day in the middle to have more, you know, relaxation, maybe even sleep in or something. Is there any variation on what I said that you had in mind, or for instance, does Animal Kingdom not appeal to you at all, or what, do you have any thoughts on that?
I would like to see all of them at least one day. I think if I had to, you know, pick one, maybe to try to do 2 days, probably the Magic Kingdom or Epcot. So sounds like about, you know, what you would suggest.
Yeah, pretty much. And if you happen to want to catch Star Wars weekends, I'm projecting that that will begin on May 15th, but nothing has been announced yet. Depending on which dates you pick, that may weigh in on your trip dates and also will affect which dates you go to the parks. So, I think it's reasonable to expect 2 days at Magic Kingdom, 2 at Epcot, potentially, especially if you like the World Showcase. 1 at Hollywood Studios, 1 at Animal Kingdom. That's 2, 4, 5, 6. And then a break day in the middle to be, you know, more flexible. Like maybe you go to Downtown Disney or, you know, just check out your resort or, you know, whatever. So that's a good general guideline, I think, for most people. And that would work with your trip length. The only variation I'd recommend is if you end up doing Star Wars weekends, that makes Hollywood Studios pretty busy. So. Mm-hmm. If you want to do Star Wars weekends, it's helpful to do Hollywood Studios on a non-Star Wars weekends night and on a Star Wars weekends night. But that will depend on which dates you end up choosing and if you're interested in Star Wars weekends at all.
Mm-hmm.
At Epcot, since you have 2 days, potentially their Flower and Garden Festival will be lovely. Beautiful, like topiaries and different food booths all around where you can sample foods and if anybody in your group is into gardening, they've got special like gardening exhibits and like HGTV stars show up and give talks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that may or may not be appealing. They have, yeah, musical acts like from the 70s that play at Epcot. So it's kind of a, you know, kind of an event that you might enjoy while you're there.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds great.
And I normally suggest after you kind of figure out how many days you want to spend in the parks to also figure out what dining you would pair with those days. Mm-hmm. And you kind of need to know your resort, I think, to finalize some of these plans. But for instance, if you were assigned, if your resort that you were assigned was Wilderness Lodge, then a good dining option might be a restaurant that's at Wilderness Lodge, which would be mm-hmm. like Whispering Canyon Cafe or something like that. But like on your Magic Kingdom days, it's helpful to say, okay, on when I'm at Magic Kingdom, this is where I want to eat on these days. And if any of the reservations you decide on are difficult, then you want to definitely make those 180 days in advance. Do you think you'll be doing any, I know your group is four adults. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you guys will be interested in characters or things like that?
I would like to, yes. I am an adult, but I think that would be super fun. So I would like to at least do that once.
And is there a specific characters or is it just like the classic characters that you think would be most fun?
I would say, I mean, I've looked at it a little bit, and as far as for the character ones, the two I had maybe an interest in would be Chef Mickey's or Cinderella's Royal Table. Mm-hmm. I mean, those both, I mean, I guess they're different ones, but they, either one of those I think would be like really great.
Yeah. And I agree. They're both fun. And, they're both near Magic Kingdom. I mean, Cinderella's Royal Table is in Magic Kingdom, but mm-hmm. Chef Mickey's is very close to Magic Kingdom because it's at the Contemporary Resort, which is, within walking distance or monorail from Magic Kingdom. So what I might suggest is on your Magic Kingdom days that you plan Cinderella's Royal Table for a breakfast. You can eat in at Cinderella's Royal Table before the park opens if you mm-hmm. make that reservation 180 days in advance. Those should be available to you. And what's great about that is you can get in the park before it opens and take pictures in front of the castle without all the tourists in it. Mm-hmm. So and so that's a fun way to start a Magic Kingdom day, and then you go in the castle and you get to eat, and there's princesses. So you know that's all, you know, fun and hard to replicate anywhere else. Mm-hmm. The castle is right. The castle.
Yeah.
So that's a really good one. Chef Mickey's is great. I think Chef Mickey's is fun for dinner. Probably breakfast is good too, but Chef Mickey's is fun for dinner. So maybe that's a good thing to do at the end of a Magic Kingdom day or in the evening on a Magic Kingdom day. I'm just trying to emphasize the point that you want to make sure you eat near where you're going to be, because one of my biggest mm-hmm. mistakes I ever made on a trip was that I planned our dining and I planned our park days and they weren't near each other. So mm-hmm. we ended up riding buses forever just to get to dinner. And it was incredibly annoying and probably a waste of time. So mm-hmm. if you can plan restaurants near where you'll be, then that saves a lot of transportation time. So that is, generally my suggestion.
Yeah.
So the two things you've named are Magic Kingdom related. So those should be, you know, easy to fit in on Magic Kingdom days. And then we discussed maybe two Epcot days. There are a lot of restaurants at Epcot. So there's a long list to kind of work through and figure out what makes sense because the World Showcase has so many restaurants to choose from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's also kiosks there during the Food and Wine Festival. So you could like eat around the world if you want to. Mm-hmm. Like you just, you know, walk. This is what we did. We just got back from the Food and Wine Festival, which is kind of similar in that you just walk around and it's kind of fun to sample the foods and visit the countries mm-hmm. and go shopping and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So at Epcot, you might consider doing that. You might consider going to the kiosks if you go during the Food and Wine, I mean, during the Flower and Garden Festival, but there's also a lot of restaurants. Le Cellier is my favorite, and that's located in Canada, and mm-hmm. that's a steakhouse. They have great steak and cheese soup and pretzel bread and all that. There's a great restaurant in Germany called Biergarten, where you get a German buffet. If you want to explore German foods, you can go to the buffet and try lots of German foods, and they have live music there. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and list all the restaurants because there's just too many. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to consider, though, that you guys might like. And but without knowing your group, I'm not sure specific ones to narrow it down to for you.
Yeah, I mean, we're all like kind of foodies. We just would like to try, you know, a bunch of different stuff. So we're, you know, open to anything, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in that case, I think the ones I named are good choices for that. And maybe Marrakesh is another one that's in Morocco. They have a belly dancer and you can have Moroccan food, and that's really good. But there's a lot of good restaurants, though. So it's hard to say, mm-hmm. you know, hey, you should go here, because there's a lot of good ones. You can't, for the most part, you can't really go wrong on Epcot. There's a lot of good food that you mm-hmm. could have. Animal Kingdom and Hollywood Studios are a little bit more challenging. Hollywood Studios doesn't have great quick service restaurants. They have great table service restaurants. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to like recommend a particular one. Animal Kingdom has lots of good quick service restaurants, but the table service isn't as easy to pick there. But they do have Tusker House, which has all the classic characters, kind of like Chef Mickey's does. It's the classic characters. But at Tusker House, which is inside Animal Kingdom, they're in their safari clothes. So that's kind of cute and fun. And mm-hmm. the food's really good. So that is an option there. Do you know, have you heard much about the Disney dining plan?
I have. And I'm like torn because, you know, I've been seeing pros for it and cons for it. And I think it kind of just, you know, depends on what you end up using it for, if it would make the most sense. Is that right? Would you say, or?
Yeah. I mean, it depends how you eat, because each meal is basically an entree and, it's a dessert if you eat lunch or dinner as well. And some restaurants have such huge portions that if you were paying for it yourself, you would just split an entree with whoever you're with. Mm-hmm. So on the dining plan, everybody gets a lot of food, and, you know, sometimes it can feel like a bit much, but I would mm-hmm. say once you figure out where you want to eat, then, I have a post I wrote called Maximizing Dining Credits, and it has charts of the best restaurants, on the dining plan, and like the ones that have the best value. And so mm-hmm. I would say if the restaurants you end up choosing are good values on the dining plan, then maybe the dining plan makes sense for you. But if you won't eat that much food, or if you're not eating at restaurants that are good options on the dining plan, then maybe it makes sense just to pay for your food. For most people, mm-hmm. it's cheaper to pay out of pocket, but mm-hmm. it's not all about money necessarily. For our family, it's about the experience of feeling like you're on vacation. And so even if we end up paying a bit more, our family is usually happier to have the dining plan, because you're using credits and you're not having to think about the dollars every time you order mm-hmm. something. So for instance, I took my mom to Disney World as a gift, and I didn't want her to have to think about the dollars. So I got the dining plan so she could order with credits, you know? So there's the, mm-hmm. there's a psychological aspect to the dining plan as well, if you want everybody just to kind of relax and not think about it. But if finances are a top concern, then it's usually better to pay out of pocket.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's my thoughts on that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we're... I don't know. We're probably big eaters. We would like to try a lot of different things. I mean, I guess I don't know how the portion sizes, if they're generally large, I would imagine probably. You know, if it might be too much food or not, I don't know, but it would be nice. I'd like to be able to try a lot of different things, so I could see where the dining plan would be nice for that. So
yeah, and yeah. It could be. I mean, it works for, you know, and like I'm there a lot and sometimes I use it and sometimes I don't. It really varies by trip, and I'm not saying it's good or it's bad. It just depends on the people going and how they want to eat. So it may or may not make sense for you. But either way, you don't necessarily have to decide that now. Either way, you can make dining reservations 180 days before your trip begins. But you will need to book your trip. So I'm not sure how it works with, you know, the way that you won the trip, how they want you to book it, but you will have to book it. And then you can make all of your reservations 180 days before your trip begins.
And you would recommend that for like for all of them or just the more the ones that are harder to get into?
I would typically make all my reservations 180 days beforehand, but it's really only important for the ones that are difficult. So Cinderella's Royal Table is and Chef Mickey's are going to be difficult reservations. Cinderella's Royal Table is more difficult, especially if you want to get an 8 a.m. reservation before the park opens, because it's kind of a coveted spot. Lots of people want that. But other things like, my son and I are going in a few weeks and I didn't make any dining reservations until a month beforehand, but that's because we aren't dining with characters any on this trip. And we just, we're flexible, you know, we'll take whatever's available. So yeah, you need, there are only maybe, you know, a handful of things that really need to be made 180 days in advance, but the more you can decide ahead of time, the better choice of times you'll have. And, you know, the better guarantee, because sometimes when you make it late, you end up having to eat at 8:30 at night or, you know, something kind of odd that you wouldn't prefer.
Right.
Or having no openings at all. And,
right.
you know, that's the worst case scenario. But, yeah, so the more you can decide now, the better. And, I know it's sort of a lot. You're thinking like, where am I going to be 6 months from now? And what am I going to want to eat on that day? It used to only be 90 days ahead of time that they required you to make reservations, or that's when the reservations opened up, but now it's gone to 180. So I know it's a lot to think about ahead of time. So, you know, and we've talked about how many days you might want to spend in each park. And one part of, you know, after you decide that is sort of shuffling them around. So like, I don't know what your trip dates will be, but you have to sort of think, okay, we're going to arrive on the 10th and leave on the 17th or whatever your dates are. How in those dates, now how am I going to shuffle my puzzle pieces around? Like my Magic Kingdom days, where do they go in this week? And my Epcot days, and you know, does that make sense? And so that's part of it. And I have charts on the website. I don't know if you've seen them. I have charts on the website that tell you the park hours and then for each day, which parks I think are good choices for those days.
I did see that. Yes, it looks very helpful. So, yeah, I'll have to use that to kind of plan which days I want on which one, because I would, you know, of course, prefer to avoid all the crowds and everything as much as I can.
Yeah. I mean, and the fact that you're going during a less busy time is going to make it easier, but I still recommend doing the planning like that just because less people, you know, makes life easier if you pick the parks. But more important than picking the right park each day is having touring plans once you get in the parks. And so after you've sort of figured out your dining and you already know which parks you're going to go to each day, then the next step, which you will hopefully be able to figure out by what would it be? By March, you have to make fast pass reservations 60 days beforehand. So you would want to know your touring plans. And I'm not sure if you understand the value of touring plans, but some people think it's strange at first when they hear about them. But the idea of touring plans is to have a list of rides that you want to ride in an order that allows you to minimize lines. So you don't want to show up at Magic Kingdom and then head to the first thing you see, when the best choice would be to go to the things that will be busy later in the day. Like, so you want to take advantage of those first couple of hours that the parks open and go to the things that are going to be busy. And using sites like mine helps you to research and figure out what those are, because you've never been there. So you don't know what's going to be the busiest, but I'm, you know, I'm here to tell you that, you know, these are the rides that are busy. And so these are the rides that I think will be great at first. And then my philosophy is that the morning should sort of be structured where you know a rough order of rides. And then at lunch, you can be more, you can sort of talk and discuss what you want to do the rest of the day. So it's sort of that combination of being flexible later in the day, but in the morning, maximizing your time before the crowds or the, you know, more people arrive. That way. Yeah. So the idea is to ride as many rides as you can, but I also hate the idea of people rushing from point A to point B to point C and missing the little moments. Like, you know, if you spot a character or if you see something funny happening in the streets or whatever, then it's good to stop and do that too. But having a rough order of rides is a good idea just to avoid the lines.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Absolutely. Yeah. There's, I mean, there's a few that I had in mind that I wanted to do that I think were probably busier. So you would suggest getting those, like doing those in the morning?
Generally, yes. And I will send you a download link to my ebook, which is for sale on the site. But in the ebook, there are maps that I had an illustrator create, and the maps show all the parks. Like each map prints on one piece of paper. And you can tour the parks with them. It tells you where the bathrooms are. It tells you where all the rides are. But every ride is color-coded in a way that shows you the best time of day to visit that attraction. So that way you can sort of glance at it and go, okay, in this area, we should probably hit this because, you know, it's the first hour the park is open. And then you can sort of make your way around the parks based on the best time of day to visit attractions. So I'm going to send you the ebook link just so you have that as a reference.
Thank you. That's awesome.
And I mean, the ebook has more stuff in it too. Like it has an actual book that you can read to help plan your trip. It has touring plans that you can use and that kind of stuff. So the general idea is the most popular attractions you will either visit right when the park opens, like the first hour, or you will want to get a Fast Pass Plus for that so that you can ride it later. So, have you heard much about Fast Pass Plus, or what are your sort of thoughts about it?
I have a little bit. Yes, there's, oh my goodness, I've been doing so much reading about Disney, and it's my head is like spinning. But I have read a little bit about where you get the Fast Pass, so, or the Fast Pass, so you can, it's like a certain time that you can go and do the ride, and then you don't have to wait as long. So is that right?
That's true. That's how it works. There was an old FastPass system that worked somewhat similarly, but it was a paper FastPass that you got once you were in the park. But this is different in that it's digital. It's all online. You can reserve it ahead of time in the app. And what happens is they give you a 1 hour window. And so, or you schedule a 1 hour window, and that's when you want to arrive at that attraction and ride it. And it's a special line that you enter, and it's like a shortcut line that allows you to skip the main line and get on that ride faster. So, for instance, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is the newest attraction at Disney World. And it's a little coaster, very, you know, mild, but it's new, so it's popular. And people either need to ride that right when the park opens or get a Fast Pass online 60 days ahead of time at midnight. And if you don't do that, you end up waiting in that line for a long time or not riding it at all. So most things are not as competitive as Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, but that one just happens to be new. But that's one example. And so in the ebook and in certain articles on the website, I have information about which things are like that, which things you should get fast passes. And I have recommendations about what times you should get fast passes and that kind of stuff. So most rides offer a fast pass and many of them don't need them. So you also you don't want to waste fast passes on things that aren't going to have lines.
Right.
You want to kind of maximize it so you can skip the long lines and people will give you dirty looks like, why are they skipping the line? But they could have done the same thing. They just didn't take the time to research. So, so it's, right. It's a lot. 10 years ago, I found Disney World trips difficult to plan when I first was planning mine, my first trip 10 years ago. And that was before any of this stuff existed. So it's only gotten more complicated. I can just imagine it's a whole other level of being overwhelming.
Yeah, it seems like there's so much to do ahead of time even. And
But at the same time, I mean, I hate to go and then not, you know, be able to do things I wanted to do, or, you know, have to spend half the day, you know, waiting in line just, you know, for a couple things or something. So, I mean, I think it definitely makes sense to try to prep as much beforehand.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you hadn't done any Disney World research because you didn't think you were going to be going anytime soon until you won the trip. So do you think this will be your one and only visit, or do you envision going back again someday? What do you think?
Well, I would imagine that I probably will end up loving it and I will want to come back. And, you know, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's never something I've really planned, just because, you know, obviously it costs quite a bit of money. And, I'm sure you can, you know, try to make it a little more budget friendly or reasonable. So, I mean, I could imagine probably wanting to go back, but probably not anytime soon. Maybe after, you know, I don't have kids or anything right now. So maybe in the future, after I have children, maybe I would go back with them, because that would be a whole different type of experience, I would imagine.
Yeah, I imagine it would. I did the reverse, because I always did trips with kids and then just recently did a trip without kids. So that was fun too, though. Four adults, we had a great time. So yeah, so you want to make this trip count, because it might be a while. And when you go back, it'll be with a whole different goal and group of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that makes sense. Well, I know all this is overwhelming, but I guess it's important to sort of prioritize what decisions need to be made now. Mm-hmm. And all the touring plan stuff I mentioned, all the fast pass stuff, that can wait. You've got months to think about that stuff, like literally until March. So I would focus right now on just planning what your dates are, first of all, and getting it booked through the company where you want it, and then figure out which days you want to be at the parks, like day one's Magic Kingdom, day two's Epcot, or whatever it is, and then choosing dining on that and make those reservations. That's your, that should be your focus right now. And everything else can wait until later. You've got time. And yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was listening to one of your podcasts earlier today when I was driving to work, and you suggested doing the Magic Kingdom on the first day. So is that, I mean, that's what you would suggest, or?
That's my own personal philosophy. Other people like to wait and put it later on because they feel like everything else is a letdown. I don't feel that way. I happen to like all the parks though. On one family trip, we did not do Magic Kingdom on the first day, and it was a letdown to my family that we didn't do it. So it is just my personal philosophy that the Magic Kingdom is a great place to start. And then if you have time to also revisit later in your trip.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. To me, that you kick it. I mean, Magic Kingdom feels like Disney World. Like, you know, that's where the castle is. That's where, you know, there are a lot of charming rides and all that kind of stuff. I love Epcot. Our family's favorite park is Epcot, actually. But Epcot isn't quite as magical as Magic Kingdom in the same way. It's just different. So for us, it just makes a lot of sense to start at Magic Kingdom.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. That's probably what I'll do.
Yeah. And I definitely would recommend a break day in the middle. And I think that is hard for people, especially if you're saying, oh, but I've only got 7 days and we might not be back. Your trip overall will be better if you are well rested as much as possible, because you will probably walk 6 to 12 miles a day. And so it's helpful to have a break day where there's no alarm. You don't have to walk for 8 miles and there's nowhere to be right away. It's just a nice vibe. So I would recommend that you maybe do 3 park days, have a break day, do 3 more park days, and then go home. That would be my suggestion.
Right. Well, you don't want to get too run down where you can't enjoy it all. So that makes sense.
It's exhausting. I don't care how old you are. I don't care how fit you are. It is tiring. And in May, there's a good chance it'll be warm during your dates as well. And that always, you know, requires more breaks just because, you know, you get hot and sweaty. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I would recommend a break day in the middle of a week long trip.
Okay. I mean, is there anything like relaxing that you would recommend that, like, I know they have different, like they have their spas or they have the different kind of like water kind of water park stuff. I mean, would you recommend doing any of that kind of thing?
I have not personally visited the spas, but there are a couple of spas on site. We tend to spend our break day sleeping in and then visiting downtown Disney. If shopping and that kind of stuff appeals to you, then downtown Disney will be a good option. But yes, the water parks are great too. They're both great. There's two. Typhoon Lagoon happens to be our family's favorite. It is a beach theme. It has this huge wave pool and some great slides and things like that. So that's a good option too on a break day. Like you sleep in, take a break, you know, have kind of a break at the first part of the day. And then the last 4 or so hours that a water park is open are often good time to visit because a lot of the crowds that were there earlier in the day have left. But yeah, I mean, water parks are good, but your tickets that you got may not include that. So that might be an additional cost.
Right. Yeah. I'll have to look into that. But yeah, I mean, like you said, I don't know if I'll be back there anytime in the near future. So I would like to see just everything that it has to offer, even though I know that that's possible or not possible. There's so many things there, but I'd like to at least, you know, take a look at a little bit of everything if I could.
Yeah. I think allocating time in the parks the way that we talked about earlier will give you a good overview of all the parks. Mm-hmm. But you always could stay flexible too. So, maybe on your last full day there, you could say, well, let's just decide what we want to do when we get there. So for instance, on one trip we did that and our kids decided, okay, we know we've done 2 days in Epcot, but we want a third day in Epcot. So we went back, we did 3 full days in Epcot. And, you just never know. Like when my kids were really little, I realized we hadn't ridden the monorail one trip, and the monorail to little kids is like a ride. So, you know, on our flexible day or whatever, we went and made sure we got on the monorail. So, you know, there's something to be said for having some unplanned open time and sort of, you know, figuring out when you get there, what feels right and what you'd like to spend more time doing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Disney has made it so that you have to plan so much ahead of time that it's hard to figure out how to work in unplanned flexible time too.
Right.
But I mean, I get it. That makes it very difficult, but if possible, it's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. We'll probably try to have to just do kind of a mix of both as far as planning some things, but also, you know, leaving some time open to, you know, whatever interests us or, you know, whatever we could do kind of spontaneously, I guess.
So what can I do to help you with your plans right now?
Let's see here. I've been writing down some of the things here. Okay. Let's see. What would you say? One second. Let me think. Okay. As far as the rides, I have here a few that I'm interested in that I'm a little nervous to go on some of the bigger rides, but I guess they're probably not too bad, but like Space Mountain, Splash Mountain, Soarin'. But how would you, I guess, describe them or compare them to other, like, roller coasters? Are they really, like, I don't know. I mean, just what are they like? I don't even know.
So Soarin' isn't scary at all. It's a great ride, and it is I don't want to sort of spoil it too much, because when you get there, it's a fun experience. And I just want you to experience it for the first time when you get there without me ruining it. But it's not scary. It's a gentle lift, and you watch something on a screen and sort of feel like you're floating, you know, in the screen, like an IMAX screen. It's just a big, there's nothing particularly scary about it. Splash Mountain is a ride that has, it's like a log ride, and it has drops occasionally, and some of those drops splash you, and one of those drops is big. Most of the drops are kind of small, and but one of the drops is quite big. Not as bad as some. I've been to other theme parks, including Universal, and they have bigger drops, but Splash has several of different lengths. Space Mountain is inside in the dark, and it doesn't go upside down or anything like that, but it is in the dark, and it's really kind of jerky. That's, you know, so if people have bad backs and stuff, Space Mountain's a difficult one, but it's you know, moderately scary.
Okay. Let's see. Have you, I know, like, from what I've read, that, like, one of the hot things, or one of the hardest things to do is to meet Anna or Anna and Elsa. Mm-hmm. Have you been able to do that ever?
No, but we aren't in characters very much. But I've been able to help lots of people meet Anna and Elsa. And that is the most difficult Fast Pass to get in all of Disney World.
Yes, that's, I hear it's quite coveted right now. It's obviously because it's so popular. So
it is. And they used to be in Epcot for a while, because there's a Norway section at Epcot. So they put them there, and then they moved them to Magic Kingdom. Mm-hmm. So now they are in Magic Kingdom, and it is such a difficult Fast Pass reservation to get, that the only way that most people, the only way that they get it is they're online 60 days beforehand at midnight, and they jump to the end of their trip to get it first, because it's easier to get things at the end of your trip than the beginning, and they snag it. So for instance, on your 7-day trip, if day six was Magic Kingdom and you wanted a Fast Pass to meet Anna and Elsa, you would jump right to day six as soon as your midnight hit. And you would try to get one for that day.
Mm-hmm.
It's very tricky. That one's the top most difficult one to get, second to Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Everything else is much easier.
Mm-hmm. It sounds difficult. So, but I would love to try it. It's a good movie. So
yes, it's a very good movie. And Disney's been trying to put out some stuff to appease the fans. But as soon as they do, it gets booked up, and you know, it's a bit of a competition sometimes.
Mm. Okay. Let's see. I also was reading, as far as for the dining or the restaurants here, this is for who's going is me and my boyfriend and my sister and my mom. So we may have some time where we split up
as far as like my boyfriend and I go and like spend some time just together.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, separate from my mom and my sister. I mean, do you have anything in particular? Like, I was reading about some of the best, like, more romantic restaurants or kind of like date type of things. Did you have any recommendations for that?
Yeah. I do have like date night ideas where I suggest more grown-up restaurants. And so, yeah, I think that's a really good idea. I think a lot of the restaurants in the World Showcase could be contenders, but then there's also great restaurants in the hotels that could be a good option. Like California Grill is in the Contemporary, and they have good sushi, and you can watch the fireworks at Magic Kingdom from there. There's also restaurants in there's restaurants at all the hotels near there. Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. Hold on. Wilderness Lodge has Artist Point, which is a Pacific Northwest themed hotel near Magic Kingdom. And mm-hmm. Artist Point has foods that you might find in the Pacific Northwest, particularly things like salmon. And what I like about Artist Point is that it's a nice restaurant, but it's not so hard to get into it. And it's a little bit more casual. Like, you wouldn't feel out of place there wearing casual clothes. It's not kind mm-hmm. of, it's not uptight. So that's a good option. And Yachtsman Steakhouse is a good one at the Yacht Club. If steak is a thing that you are interested in. And then there's a restaurant called Jiko's at Animal Kingdom Lodge. And that one has like its own spin on African food. And it's kind mm-hmm. of like quiet and the lighting is low. So it's kind of more romantic than a lot of the restaurants are.
Okay. See, I'm just trying to look here. I don't know. There's just like so much. I mean, I have like all kinds of questions, but at the same time, I don't even know here. Okay. Do you know what you mentioned earlier about the Star Wars thing that's going on in May?
Mm-hmm.
What I was not aware of that. Could you maybe describe that a little bit more?
There's a lot of different elements to Star Wars weekends, and my favorite happens to be the fireworks, because they have Hollywood Studios doesn't generally have fireworks, but just during special events they do. And so they have fireworks on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday during Star Wars weekends that is set to Star Wars music. And that happens to be my favorite part, but there's lots of different elements to it. Like, there are celebrities that appear, and celebrities vary in their level of celebritydom, but they're typically people who have voiced characters from the Star Wars movies. And so, you know, when you're there, there's no schedule that's been released for your, you know, mid-May yet, but you'll find out later. And some of them will sign autographs. There's motorcades where it's sort of like a, you know, just a bunch of cars driving down with the celebrity in the car. And as of 2014, this year, the Star Wars weekends also included some special character meals. So two of the restaurants at Hollywood Studios allowed you to dine with characters. At Hollywood and Vine, which is a buffet restaurant, they had the classic Disney characters dressed in their Star Wars gear. And then at Sci-Fi, they had, I think it was a breakfast there. And that was actually with the Star Wars characters themselves while the movie screens played Star Wars movies. Wow. So there's some dining options, there's some character options, there's the fireworks, there's a motorcade. So there's some different elements to it. And if you at all like Star Wars movies, it's a lot of fun. A lot of people, my daughter described it as like being at a Comic-Con, because there's so many people in character and in costume.
Wow. Okay. Sounds fun.
It is fun. And I think if you do that though, sometimes it makes the park quite busy. We actually had a very light crowd night when we attended Star Wars weekends, but if it is busy, it could be. Also visiting Hollywood Studios on a different day that's not having Star Wars weekends, like during the weekday, might be a good idea, just so you get the best of both worlds. Like, on a Wednesday, you visit Hollywood Studios and you ride the rides, and then maybe you come back on a Friday or Saturday to enjoy the Star Wars weekends part of it.
Okay. Makes sense. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. I mean, like I've said, I've always grown up being a huge fan of Disney, but like I've said, I haven't done a lot of research at the park or about the park in particular. Mm-hmm. Is there anything like that I definitely need to know or like definitely have to do, or what would you recommend for just to make sure I don't like miss something like really great.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people, I get a lot of emails. They say, what are the must do's at Disney World? And I don't think there are any must do's beyond the obvious that you should probably visit, you know, at least a couple of the parks and eat at a couple of good restaurants. I mean, there's no must-dos. It's a huge place. It's as big as San Francisco. So, you know, that you can't do everything. So the goal would be to enjoy yourselves, have fun together, and choose, you know, a few great places to eat and ride as many rides as you can without waiting in lines and have fun together. So I wouldn't put too much pressure on, like, you're going to read stuff and you're going to think, oh my gosh, I hadn't even considered that. Or, oh, do we need to do that also? Or do we need, and really you don't. I mean, you really should just pare it down and make sure that what you've got is a good plan and enjoy that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, don't feel like you have to do everything, because you're not. Just like if you went to San Francisco for a week, you wouldn't be able to eat in every restaurant there, see every attraction, or do everything. You're not.
Right. Yeah. There's just so much. Yeah.
You just, you know, you have to just make some choices, pare it down, and then enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Do you collect the pins? I know there's like this whole like pin trading thing where you can like trade pins with people. Do you do that?
I do not do that. But it is fun and it's something a lot of people love to do. And I'm going to include a link in the show notes to a great guide that I found that I think is helpful for people that want to collect them. And I will send that link to you as well.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
There are a lot of things to look out for in pin trading. Like, you don't want to get scammed and when you buy, because you have to buy pins before you go. You know, typically people do that. Mm-hmm. You don't want to end up getting scammed in the process. So there's some things, right, things to think about.
Right. Okay. I mean, is there anything else you think I should know? Or like, I mean, I guess there's a lot. I don't know.
No, I would just focus on figuring out what your dining is going to be. You know, shuffle your days around as far as like which park you want to be at every, you know, figure out where you want to be each day, figure out your dining, make those reservations soon. I guess you have to make your whole trip reservation soon as well. And then you've got months to figure out the rest of it. And so, you know, anything that's ride specific or touring plan specific or fast pass specific, you've got months to figure that stuff out. You've only got a couple weeks right now to figure out where you think you'll be each day and what you'll eat that day. Mm-hmm. And okay. I would probably make at least one dining reservation, table service. You know, there's two different kinds of restaurants, table service, which is they allow reservations, and quick service, which is they don't allow reservations. It's just you walk up and order at the counter. But I would make at least one table service reservation for each day of your trip. Probably. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have a list now of some ones that I'm interested in. So hopefully I can at least get some of those reservations in, I hope.
Yeah. And I can, there's a really great tool that makes the Disney site is not easy to figure out when it comes to searching dining, because it's like this, I don't know what it is with Disney, but they don't design their sites very well. But there's a site I use to search dining that I love, and it's I will include this in the show notes and email it to you as well. But it's on DisneyDVCResale.com, and for some reason this website just has this great search tool. And it allows you to put in like where you're going to be and your date range. And it shows you which restaurants are available, which restaurants have openings on those days. And you're more than 180 days out right now. So there's not going to be any openings for mid-May yet. But it's still a great tool for searching, and it's easier to use than the Disney site. So
okay.
I'll send you that link. There's so many tools all over the internet. It's sort of like piecing it together. Like I'll take that dining tool from there, and I'll take that FastPass tool from there, and it's a bit of patchwork to figure out where to get all your tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. There's just a lot to do here, but I'm excited though. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of things I'd like to see and do, and just gotta
fit it all together, kind of like you said, like this on this day, and you know, if you're here, then go do this. And so, yeah, it's exciting.
And once you put together your plans about where you're going to be and where you're going to eat, feel free to send that to me. When people who have the ebook can, they have a private email address to email me, and I will give them feedback on their plans if they want it. And then after you make your dining reservations, then you can work on touring plans. You can send those to me as well, and I will let you know if they make sense to me.
Awesome. Thank you.
So that's another way to go about it. But anyway, so book your trip.
Yes.
Book your trip. And then you've got a couple weeks to figure out dining reservations. Send those to me. I'll provide feedback, and hopefully you'll be in good shape to book those in November.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Now the only other, if we don't go in May, the other time we were thinking of would be September.
Mm-hmm.
September, I think there's supposed to be like a lot less crowds. I mean, is there any other, I mean, if you had to pick between those two, what would you pick?
I would pick mid-May. September is generally a good time. September is in hurricane season, so it's a bit less predictable just because of hurricanes. Might be great, might not be. It's also, I'm getting a little bit scared of fall because so many school districts have started adjusting their schedules to have a fall break. And I don't think most of them happen in September, but, and I think they're in October more than September, but I'm getting a little bit nervous about fall. And I think things are changing a bit when it comes to fall crowds. It's getting to be kind of like spring break crowds. Okay. So, September could be great. It's just unpredictable right now. I think mid-May is going to be great for sure, because there aren't going to be any breaks then. It's right at the end of the school year. And it's really right before the crowds arrive. So I like mid-May better.
Okay. Okay. I'll probably stick with that then. That should be good. So
The downside for you is you've got less time to plan a May trip. True. I mean, if you were to go in September, then you wouldn't be booking dining reservations until like March. Mm-hmm. So if you can get these decisions made soon and make it, I think mid-May would be great.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably what we'll end up doing, because my sister's a senior in college, and she graduates like right at the beginning of May. So we were thinking of going like in the middle, then right afterwards, kind of, you know, it's a family celebrate type of thing. So
yeah, that'd be fun. And you could put that on all your reservations too. We're celebrating a college graduation. And then sometimes they do special things when you're celebrating.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Cool. Okay. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah. And there's no Star Wars weekend. So if you have Star Wars fans in your group, then you have to go in May or June, because that's when they happen.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Also true. Okay. I'll probably stick with May then. Okay. 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 So.
Well, I hope that's given you some information to go on and hopefully move your plans along. It's congratulations on winning that trip.
Oh, thank you. Yes. This has been a big help. It's just digesting it all, trying to, you know, prioritize here, figure out what we're doing. But this, yeah, gave me definitely some good recommendations and tips. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And remember, after I send you the ebook and you have some time to sort of think about it, email me with your plans. And then before you are ready to make your dining reservations, I'll give you some feedback and some strategies about the right order to make them in.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
So anyway, I hope that's helpful, and it's been great to talk to you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate all the help.
I hope you enjoyed listening to my discussion with Judy. If you happen to be counting the number of times I said, you probably lost count at 381 or something. I think some episodes I get addicted to saying, especially when I'm talking to somebody, I'm having to think on my feet about what the answers are, because she asked a lot of questions that required me to look up information and make sure I was giving her the correct information. But this has been an episode. As usual, I do have a quick tip of the day to mention before we wrap it up. My quick tip of the day is, if you are at the end of a year, like right now we're in October 2014, and you are looking for 2015 dining plan restaurants using the Disney website, you might be confused, because a lot of restaurants are not showing as being Disney Dining Plan participants. And that's because at the end of a year, the restaurants are all in the process of renewing their contracts to be part of the dining plan. And so they are not officially listed as 2015 dining plan restaurants. So my tip is, if you are using the search option on the Disney website that says, I want to only see 2015 dining plan restaurants, my suggestion is just to flip it to 2014 dining plan restaurants, because the list almost always stays the same from year to year. And I don't want you to be scared that the list is going to be much smaller, because the fact is it's just still being finalized. So just go ahead and switch it to 2014, and that'll be a fairly safe bet. And that will give you the list of restaurants that will likely end up being the full list for 2015 as well. And since you made it this far into this long episode, I just want to remind you that if you are an iTunes user, that ratings and reviews are podcast currency, and we love having those. That helps this podcast to show up in the search results. So if people are podcast listeners and they search for Disney World, then the number of ratings and reviews helps this podcast to show up higher in the results for them. And that way we have more listeners. The number of listeners is quickly growing, but we can always use some more. So if you could leave a rating or review, that would be fantastic. I think that will wrap up this episode of WW Prep to Go. For more information on the show, including all the links that I've mentioned at the beginning and during the interview, you can visit wwprepschool.com/episode62. That is the number 62. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.